I think what DAOs offer on a sort of civic scale is the ability of putting those decisions back into the people who it actually affects. What I think also has the potential to be very revolutionary, and that can be a swing both ways, hard right to hard left, is that DAOs actually also have the ability to hold funds for micro units of political organization cells.
Hello and welcome to the Culture and Technology Podcast, brought to you by the Vienna Business Agency. My name is Severin Matuszek. I'm a writer and researcher based in Berlin, and today's guest is Penny Rafferty. Penny is a writer and theorist based in Berlin. She co-founded Black Swan DAO and Omsk Social Club, two independent art organizations and collectives that experiment with new forms of organizing, funding, and performing the production of art and culture. We met at her studio in Berlin to talk about rethinking the ways we organize ourselves, using the blockchain as a tool for radical imagination and the real-world impact of decentralized autonomous organizations, in short, DAOs, on the art world and culture at large. Welcome to the podcast, Penny.
Thank you for having me.
I would like to start with a time travel to about a year ago, when you released Radical Friends, the book that you edited and published together with Ruth Catlow at KW, a gallery in Berlin. I was there. It was very exciting. It was a full room, I guess 200 people. You launched the book and there was this sort of excitement in the air. There was this, wow, stuff is happening. There's a new form, new ways of organizing ourselves, new ways of creating and distributing value. It felt like peak web-free excitement. And you mentioned before, it kind of like overwhelmed you, or you didn't expect this to happen. So can you talk us a little bit through how did that evening feel for you, but also what led up to it? How did Radical Friends come about?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was quite overwhelming for both myself and Ruth, because to a certain degree, we hadn't quite realized how many people would be interested in this new software. And this, to a certain degree, was because we'd been kind of mining away in the theory and the practice of decentralized autonomous organizations for the previous 2 years before the book was released. And the only reason why we decided to release the book was that we couldn't find the book that we wanted to reference. So we decided, along with Serpentine Galleries in London, to actually begin putting together a reader that covered some of the more radical art-orientated or art-situated decentralized autonomous organizations that were aligned with a sort of social reflex. And this came from our own personal research initially. And that's actually how myself and Ruth met. We met in Athens at a kind of quite small but well-attended a blockchain summit that was actually organized by Onassis Foundation. And both myself and Ruth were actually invited as speakers to this small sort of summit that was organized. And we met over lunch and began to speak about DAOs. Now, this wasn't actually the underlying topic of the weekend. That was actually much more looking at what blockchain organization can do. What was very immediate between the connection between myself and Ruth was our shared passion to bring not only new governance, but simultaneously to look at governance as a world-making proposal, and that a lot of our ideas around decentralized autonomous organizations was very much about bringing a decision-making arena back into the sort of embodied knowledge of society. From that point onwards, we actually ran two 52-hour summits alongside Goethe and Serpentine. They were a group of invited technologists, artists, activists, and theorists that we invited to kind of create a conglomerate of knowledge, many of which actually subsequently ended up in Radical Friends. And I think that's ultimately what created Radical Friends, was us pulling on peers within the field that had a belief in an alternative to decentralized finance, which, to be totally honest, is usually the most flexed topic inside this scene.
Two follow-up questions. So just for the audience to understand, Ruth is the co-editor and publisher, but Ruth is Ruth Catlow is the person behind Further Field, right? Just to give some context about who Ruth is coming from the other direction. And Further Field, to my understanding, is the or one of the longest running digital activism organizations, started in 1996 or something. Can you give a bit of background
yes,
info?
With her partner, Mark. So yeah, Further Field is a small establishment that is situated inside a park in the middle of London and has been very much a central actor in the very early nascent stages of arts and technology, where Ruth and Mark really took hold of what technology can do for social good through the lens of art making. And they've coined and created and brought many people together that I think really make up today some of the most important voices in arts and technology.
And I think I read in Radical Friends that when you and Ruth met and started talking about DAOs, decentralized autonomous organizations, I think it was written that Ruth already got interested in a topic somewhere around 2013, which seems incredibly early, like a lot earlier than most others.
As I said, she's a trailblazer.
Yeah. So Ruth got into this very early. I mean, she can probably tell the story herself. Maybe we interview her one day. But how did you get into it? Where did your original interest about governance, social organizing, and also what you've just mentioned, the embodiment of these actions come from?
So my background was sort of almost more of a Luddite structure than a technological one. So I was very much part of grassroots street activist politics. Around 2016, I met and became very quick friends and aligned with Ben Vickers, who actually set up the Arts and Technology Lab in the Serpentine. But before that, he actually worked with a number of other really amazing practitioners, including Kia Kreitler, who's also, I would say, one of the leading voices for DAO research. And they were working on a project called On Monastery, which was, in a sense, looking at commoning alongside new technologies and very much putting those into the hands of the local users. Set up in Italy initially, but I didn't join to this one. I was actually invited to visit the one in Athens, which was on top of Mount Olympus. So we spent time communing with the Greek gods there, which certainly was not always as idealistic as that sounds. There was also a lot of kind of ruptures and splinters, and not only working through the ideas of the technology and the code itself, but also, you know, the social software that's attached to that. And through my experience there, it was also a moment where I was coming back to the arts. I actually hadn't been active within the fine arts or the art world for a number of years since I actually left art school at 21. I'd become rather, I guess, demystified from the art world at that point. But it was also a moment in Berlin when there was a lot of pressure, specifically around a group of political actors that I was aligned with. And I was beginning to see the holes and was trying to find another form to be able to carry these ideas wider and to a more sort of civic space than one has the affordance to do when you're labeled the Black Book. And so by participating in a monastery as a guest, I became very interested in organization and governance models that through role play and also through worlding and creating speculative designs. And in a sense, that was very much what I still believe DAOs are. I believe that they're world-making softwares, that they can create sort of micro-worlds that allow us to practice and participate in tools and decision-making arenas that I believe conservative governments have slowly chipped away at our ability and our pride in doing that.
To make it more obvious for our listeners what DAOs actually are, and I mean, what they are, but also how they look like. Because my experience, I am part of DAOs, I've been part of DAOs. The practical experience of being part of a DAO is often, it's merely a Discord server, at least in my experience. Like, it's a Discord server with certain members and certain tools and functionalities. Usually there are proposals, there are voting tools, and the community, the members of a certain Discord server, which of course are physical beings, usually spread around the world, organize themselves around that. Is this a correct depiction, or would you say DAOs, from your experience, also exist in physical spaces? When it comes to worlds, I wonder, are these worlds physical embodiments of worlds, or are they psychological worlds that we find ourselves in?
I think at the moment they've offered us psychological spaces. I don't think that that's what DAOs have truly promised us. I think that you're very right. I mean, in a certain sense, there was the first generation of the DAO, which is where the software was initially communed to a wider audience. This was hacked, although it actually was one of the largest crowdfunding campaigns to date. It was actually hacked and people lost a lot of belief. And so things really kind of cooled off there. Then really what kind of brokered a certain amount of people in the scene to continually create the tools that DAOs would need in able to operate. And so what DAOs actually sort of promise is a sort of legal software. So that's sort of free contracts that are attached to the blockchain at near zero cost to organize creation. And they also promise autonomous ownerless organizations and simultaneously the potential of decentralizing and distributing power. What we have seen, and that might also be because of the eruption of DAOs under lockdown, was that many DAOs took a very financial route. So a lot of DAOs that we've seen operating in this kind of phase two have very much been financialized systems of distributing funding. And usually that has been attached to a Discord server. I think personally, a lot of those DAOs in phase two are really feeling the crunch, not only at the fact that the market dipped, the crypto market dipped, but simultaneously audience attention also dipped. There was a moment where people were very happy to be on Discord. I think that after a number of years of participating so heavily online, there's a real need to reconnect. And it's been a sort of slow curve. Even after COVID, I don't think people were necessarily running out to socially participate in new organizations in an IRL manner. But I think now we're really sort of seeing that a phase three coming in, which I believe personally has to be hybrid. It has to have a physical and digital component. It has to look at the cycles of engagement. It has to look at looking after its members rather than draining its members. A lot of phase two DAOs, we saw a lot of like voting fatigue. We also began to understand that there was many spectrums of decentralization. I think that was another failure of phase two. Many of the DAOs that we saw erupting during that phase two were actually very much working in vertical decentralized forms. So actually what you would see is that the DAO in itself does delegate decision-making rights to all members, lower-level members, let's say, of the organization. But all the time, those people who started off the DAO or have a specific social popularity of that DAO, they are embedding authority and guidelines and policies and controls and checks that actually overrule or manipulate the vote. This is vertical decentralization. And so in a certain way, it's utilizing the term decentralization, but actually in many ways, it's literally acting as a centralized popularity body. And so what I think we're also noticing for the third generation of DAOs is that they really have to begin to act as horizontal decentralized units. So looking at how power can be distributed evenly and fairly, and how power positions should be dissolvable, immutable. That's not eradicating power entirely, because of course power can also be empowering. It's about how you stage and play with those roles when correlating your organization. And simultaneously, what does your DAO look like in terms of how people are equal, whether socially and institutionally? And so I think that that's, yeah, still in a certain sense, like the excitement of what DAOs have. It's in a way, I think that's also what's really interesting about these new technologies is that we're actually seeing a historical hack, not only of the code itself and the tools itself, but also socially what we need in terms of these organization tools, which of course, you know, there is a huge history of social organizing, whether that be from co-ops, monasteries, communes, covens, etc. But it was very, very hard to get that knowledge on a translocal level. But because a lot of these organizations are attached to the digital, whether that's be through the actual blockchain, so you can see the history of voting, you can actually be in the Discord, you can see the backlogs of these sort of living archives. And it's quite accelerated as well to have such an international data commons open to you. So I think that although, yeah, maybe we're seeing sort of the rise and fall of these generations of DAOs quite quickly, I don't think we're at the end of the story yet.
Yeah, that's interesting, because I wanted to go back to that moment in time a year ago at the Radical Friends launch where, as I said, I felt peak excitement. And actually, slowly, quickly after, it felt peak, like bottom, after the FTX crash, after several other, mostly, as you said, decentralized finance scandals happened. I felt like the excitement went down by a lot of people and only like a hardcore believer group remained, at least in my impression. But I think you kind of answered my question was, okay, where are we now? And I think if I interpret your answer correctly, you definitely see the evolution of DAOs as a kind of like up and down. There is an evolution, and we have now learned, as you said, from phase two, but we're now entering phase three, that, as you said, is probably takes into consideration some of these more human factors like fatigue, engagement. Because yeah, I agree. In my own personal experience, I felt the same way. In the beginning, these DAOs that I was part of felt very exciting. But then you're months in, you never see the people in person. You don't feel it in a way. It becomes this highly abstract theoretical thing. You vote a few times, but then you like, you stop caring. So it's interesting to me to hear that this is obviously something that's now being taken into consideration. I wonder, now that you mentioned the whole history of human organizing, from co-ops to monasteries to collectives, etc., so would it be correct to say that the belief behind DAOs is there is a sort of revolutionary technology that powers it, or like a potentially revolutionary technology that makes some of these historical ways of how we organize each other and how we make decisions as groups, maybe automate some of them, makes them faster, makes them more transparent. And let's say a monastery has a century, decade-old tradition of how they make decisions, and that involves a council and a plenum and several meetings and hour-long discussions. These things could be taken into a DAO structure and probably be somehow made more, I don't know if convenient is the right word, because we're probably not striving for convenience, but like, what does it do? What does it change in such a traditional form of organizing if you take something like that into a DAO structure?
I mean, I think in the monastery is a hard example, because I would understand that those terms of decision making are situated around conviviality of belief. And so the social, slow-grown procedure of decision making of a monastery, and I think also, you know, monasteries are set up with different power tiers. Not everybody has equal vote. So I guess what if we put a DAO structure onto a monastic organizing cell, what we would maybe do is change the structure of them making decisions.
But maybe for the better, because maybe people felt like, oh, it's been very hierarchical. We all want equal vote. Or is that not something that DAOs strive for?
Yes, DAOs strive for that. I'm not sure God does, though. but that's for someone else to answer. But yeah, I think to a certain extent, that is very much what DAOs could offer to this monastic organizing is equal vote, which would mean, you know, equal power, equal decision-making across the community. What it would probably also have the ability to offer would be transparency, which could be a private-public transparency. So a transparency that only the monastic members could view. Or it could be a fully public transparency. So, you know, the way that the monastery voted would be registered on the blockchain and you could sort of look back in history. That probably is also something that monasteries might be interested in that. But we see how secretive certain religious sects have been in the past. So that might also wouldn't be, I guess, what you're voting on, not be something that you want to be made public in that way. But what it would also sort of explore, I think, is the potential to explore coordination versus collaboration. Because I think what DAOs proffer is coordination, which should, after using the DAO software, offer greater ability to collaborate on a shared decision. And I think maybe that's the touchstone that excites me. And in terms of thinking about it as a revolutionary technology, I think it does have the potential to be revolutionary in terms of what it offers is greater power to smaller governance units. And I think what we've recognized is that the super scalability of nation state governance is horrendous for the civilians that it acts for. Because the amount of information flow that goes through these wider governance structures is completely abstract to the people that it is making decisions for. Simultaneously, what I think that DAOs offer is the ability for users to make decisions about things that actually affect them. Is it that somebody, this is just a small example, but why is it that somebody is given the responsibility to decide what happens with X amount of money that sits in a budget for houselessness, who's never been houseless? There's like lots of things that decisions are made. Money is distributed, resources are distributed, but there is very little personal experience. You know, I honestly believe that those who are houseless know what they need and how to utilize their resources in the best way. And so I think what DAOs offer on a sort of civic scale is the ability of putting those decisions back into the people who it actually affects. What I think also has the potential to be very revolutionary, and that can be a swing both ways, hard right to hard left, is that DAOs actually also have the ability to hold funds for micro units of political organization cells. So we've seen a Ukrainian DAO, for example, which would have meant that if, you know, Russia had fully invaded Ukraine, of course, like the country's coffers would then be under Russian rule. But what crypto couldn't be, you know? So there's like many different, this is all very hypothetical, yeah, because of course it didn't actually happen. But then simultaneously, you know, you could also see a far right insurrectionary cell crowdfunding millions and millions of US dollars to help with a campaign of taking over Capitol Hill, for example. So, you know, these are all ways that DAOs could be utilized to radicalize and shift governance that would have a physical overspill.
I'm curious to give a sort of example of how it could work in a speculative future. Like, would it be correct to say, let's zoom back 15 years in history, I think Kickstarter launched around 2009. And Kickstarter nowadays, as many similar platforms, kind of like made crowdfunding a mainstream activity and interaction that almost anyone could go on Kickstarter and say, I want to write a book and here it is. But the notion of crowdfunding, even though it existed way before Kickstarter, has been somehow commoditized and made more accessible through a platform like that. When it now comes to your examples, like how to distribute power, give it more into the local hands or into like the hands of those who actually know about the implications of certain decisions to be made, or when it comes to holding funds, do you think there's a future that probably now we talk about it in hypothetical terms, but in 5 to 10 years, the technology, but also the interfaces will be at a stage where suddenly what we talk about now becomes very easy to access, very convenient, very easy to understand for anyone to use?
I believe so, yeah.
Great. Beautiful. Yeah.
Or not. I mean, I think that there's, if you look back alongside technology and politics, I think what we've seen is that, as you spoke about Kickstarter, you know, many of these technologies have actually become more able to be used. I also think about, you know, things like the dark wallet, and even wallets in general.
Crypto wallets.
Yeah. Yes. That, you know, 5, 10 years ago, people just couldn't get their head around how to get a wallet, whereas now you can do it in like 2 clicks. I think it's very interesting that you speak about Kickstarter in a certain way, because basically the transferal of money and funds is very much the underpinning of a lot of world making, right? Without funds, you actually can't get very far. And I think that it's also something that has been very centralized, before crypto. And so has actually damned a lot of world making. I think also about like the modes and mechanics that have been put in place in order to do that, whether that be from like Visa and MasterCard, like for example, shutting down the ability to fund WikiLeaks or Julian Assange or ISIS. And I think also, you know, at the moment, there's a lot of deep conversations about how to get money across over to Gaza, which has also been dammed. I think that many of us, we don't often want to talk about the economic mechanics that allow for world making or political nuances to appear. And I think DAOs is potentially one of those technologies that will make it much more apparent to us how important that actually has been.
Yes, I was talking about making a transition to some of these macro topics of crypto and decentralization, because what you just mentioned with power structures, that decentralization or these technologies are, of course, seen and existing power players or those who hold the power see the revolutionary potential of these technologies and obviously have an interest to not let that happen. I would say my personal interpretation is that the result of this is that we see what's currently happening is the mainstream in which most of these technologies are being applied now and where most of the funds go is financial and is somehow another take on the existing powers holding their power. And that brings us to sort of, you know, resistance in technology, or like anarchy, maybe almost, of like, how can countercultural forces use this or develop technology that might defeat that power or fight that existing power structures? What do you think about that?
I think that you're very correct in your reading. I mean, it's interesting, the year that the book Radical Friends came out, there was also a lot of discussion across the European Union about actually making DAOs illegal. So community accounts that could hold money that don't have to be like legally registered and can also hold money internationally was something that they specifically saw as a threat. And what I think in terms of like answering your question is, I think there's two, maybe three ways that this technology can be utilized as a civic hacking unit. And I think the first would be to get involved with it. I think that this, as I said before, these technologies will be developed. There is not really any room for the Bartleby, I prefer not to, unless we just allow these tools to be weaponized through ulterior modes. So I think that's very important about getting involved in the discussion, about educating oneself. I think also in terms of educating, I think it's not only about educating oneself about how these technologies work, but also informing oneself about how you want those technologies to work. And, you know, it's a great bit of propaganda that many of these centralized power units within the crypto scene have unfolded is how complex this is as a technology. It's actually not. Of course, there is some complexity in the way that there is new nouns that we have to get to grips with, but simultaneously, the modes are quite archaic in how these governance and economy are actually functioning. And I think by brokering new spaces for community coding, for community situated test spaces, and also for bringing about a sort of socially placed technology. So not always thinking about that as the computer. How do we also break out of that unit and architecture in order to practice socially based tooling?
To close the conversation, we started with Radical Friends.
Yes.
So what's next with Radical Friends? You just mentioned a second edition is coming out. So the first one is sold out. Are the conversations that you started with Radical Friends continuing? Are you planning to document phase 3 of DAOs through maybe another Radical Friends conference or book?
we are planning to make phase three.
Good.
We have, so myself and Ruth Ketlow alongside Serpentine R&D Lab, to which we are both the principal investigators there of the blockchain lab, have embarked this year on creating an operational blueprint of a third generation of DAO, which is socially focused translocal infrastructure that will hopefully launch in 2024 and run two prototype years in five city demonstrators, committing to code the bindings and also the post understandings of where radical friends became cannibalized and where it needed more attention, and trying to deploy a new mode of DAO.
Beautiful. I'm looking forward to that.
Us too.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This was Penny Rafferty. You can order Radical Friends Volume 1 at a bookshop near you and stay updated with Penny's other work via omsksocial.club. This is the Culture and Technology Podcast, produced by the Vienna Business Agency. The Vienna Business Agency supports new companies, projects, and products that develop Vienna's creative industries further.